You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicap. Welcome to the reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for Tuesday, May 5th. I'm Katie Carlton from Drake University. Here is our first story. Our first story is titled Foster Parents Needed in Iowa, and this is by Courtney Durham. Interested in being a foster parent? Lutheran Family Services is offering foster family orientation online through webinars. This gives anyone interested a chance to ask questions or progress toward becoming foster parents. According to Kendall S. Steves, Lutheran Family Services foster and adoptive family recruiter. We've been trying to get information out there and let people know just because we have a pandemic doesn't mean there's not still a need for foster parents, as Steves said. Some of their specific needs include taking in teenagers and siblings. The number of individuals who became foster parents initially went down at the beginning of the pandemic, but numbers have gone up a bit as word spread about the webinars, as Steve said. The pandemic has brought other challenges like connecting foster children to their biological parents. I know a lot of foster parents are anxious to visit their bio families face to face, which is better so they can maintain those connections, as Steve said. That bonding time was moved online, where connections are encouraged through FaceTime, Skype, or Zoom. However, as Steve said, the in-person meeting is best for both the biological family connection as well as the foster parent orientation to create stronger bonds during that time. Jay and Kat Lucci are parents of one foster family taking advantage of this time alone to bond with their foster children. They're doing this through homeschooling as well as sewing masks together. In total, they've sewn an estimated 500 masks. This family's having fun together. Building their family connections while helping the community through the COVID-19 pandemic, as Steve said. Lutheran Family Services is thus far planning to hold an in-person orientation in Council Bluffs in June. Anyone with questions or interested in fostering can get more information at lsiowa.org/foster. I would love to see more people at a webinar or orientation who just want to know more so they can make an informed decision later on, as Steve said. Now I'm going to move to our next article. This one is titled CDC. Nearly 600 meatpacking workers in Nebraska tested positive for coronavirus in April. And this is by Aaron Duffy. New numbers from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show nearly 600 workers across 12 meatpacking plants in Nebraska tested positive for the coronavirus in April, with at least one death. That's roughly 3% of the 20,000 workers employed by those 12 plants, similar to coronavirus outbreaks seen in homeless shelters, prisons, hospitals, and nursing homes. The close quarters work and crowded conditions involved in the slaughtering, slicing, and packaging of meat seem to allow the virus to spread more easily, the CDC said. But it's still unclear whether workers who are falling ill caught the virus at work or out in the community. Nationally, 4,913 workers in 115 facilities in 19 states have tested positive, and 20 have died. That's also about 3% of the 130,000 workers in those plants. In Iowa, 377 workers in just two plants tested positive, or 18.2% of those plants' workforce. The CDC collected and analyzed aggregate data on infections among meat and poultry workers, including numbers submitted by 19 states, including Nebraska, Iowa, South Dakota, Kansas, and Colorado. The data does not name specific plants. In Nebraska and Iowa, meat and food processing workers have come down with COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, and plants run by food giants like Tyson Foods, Smithfield Foods, and JBS USA, as well as smaller processors, sending coronavirus rates soaring in communities like Grand Island, Lexington, Madison, and Crete, and in Dakota County. Dakota County, population 20,000, is ranked number 4 in the country for confirmed cases per capita. Hall County, where Grand Island is located, and Dawson County, where Lexington sits, have some of the highest case numbers in Nebraska. The Nebraska number is tested by the CDC may be low. A source told the Sioux City Journal, for example, that 669 workers at the Dakota City plant alone had tested positive, more than the 588 cases counted by the CDC for the entire state of Nebraska. The Sioux City Journal has also reported on 3 deaths tied to the plant, Friday, Douglas County Health Director Addie Poor said there were 5 coronavirus clusters affecting food processing facilities in the Omaha area. It could be that these individuals are bringing it into the plant from their home and community environment, she said at a press conference. So we need to protect both sides of it. It's not only the meatpacking plant. The meatpacking plants, I can tell you, we have been on the phone calls with them. They are really trying to do the best that they can. Other advocacy groups have called on plants to provide more protections for workers, including masks, widespread testing, paid sick leave, and more distancing on the crowded conveyor belt-style production lines. The CDC recommends installing dividers or barriers between workers, requiring all workers to wear masks, and slowing down production so workers can space out. Supervisors also need to provide information about the virus and its prevention in multiple languages, the CDC said. In just one plant, workers, many of whom are refugees or immigrants, spoke more than 40 languages. The Dakota City Tyson Beef Plant, located just south and over the river from Sioux City, Iowa, closed temporarily over the weekend for deep cleaning to help contain the outbreak there. Meanwhile, the Tyson plant in Madison, south of Norfolk, ran on reduced schedule Friday and Saturday so all of its workers could be tested, a Tyson spokeswoman said. On Thursday, 96 workers had tested positive, according to Elkhorn Logan Valley Public Health Department, with more test results expected back this week. The CDC are the first partial accounting of how hard the virus is hitting meatpacking workers in Nebraska. The Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services has not released that data, and only some local health departments are disclosing coronavirus cases tied to specific plants. But even the CDC numbers are imperfect. Not all states with meat facilities submitted data. The numbers only capture a snapshot from April 9th through April 27th, and the number of infections may be a reflection of how many workers were actually tested for the virus. By April 27th, Nebraska counted more than 33,000 coronavirus cases total, meaning the cases tied to the meatpacking plants may have made up 17.5% of all infections in the state at that point in time. By Sunday night, the state count had grown to 5,910 cases, which includes at least some people who have since recovered from COVID-19. Differences in case counts and percentage of workers with COVID-19 are affected by the testing strategies employed. But more infected workers identified in settings with more testing, the CDC wrote. Testing in Nebraska has been limited and was often focused, at least in the beginning of the pandemic, on first responders, healthcare workers, and those with more severe symptoms. A new COVID-19 assessment and testing initiative, Test Nebraska, aims to dramatically increase testing over the next month or so. Mass testing events were being held on Monday in Omaha and Grand Island. Christopher Burbach with the Lee BHM News Service contributed to the report. The next article is titled Fremont Mills High School Gets Creative to Celebrate Graduation. This is by Tim Johnson. Fremont Mills High School is getting creative to overcome the limitations presented by the COVID-19 pandemic and mitigation guidelines. The school is planning to have a graduation parade on May 17th, the original date for the graduation ceremony. The event will begin at 2 p.m. and follow the homecoming parade route, extended to about 8 blocks to give cars more room to practice social distancing, according to Jeremy Christensen, secondary principal. Each senior will line up a pickup or car in which to ride, he said, in a message to Fremont Mills families. This vehicle can be driven by a family member over the age of 21. Seniors can make signs and or decorate his or her vehicle for this event. A presentation will be aired over an area radio station yet to be announced for families to listen during the event, Christensen said. While we understand this is not traditional, we hope you embrace the situation and create a wonderful experience for the class of 2020, he told families in the message. Officials still hope to have a virtual graduation ceremony on June 28th. In addition, plans are to make a video with each senior being announced and walking across the stage in their cap and gown and receiving their diploma. Individual photos will be taken of each senior by appointment. The parade idea was the result of many meetings with other school officials, Christensen said. Myself and DJ Erkenbrack, our tech director, we're discussing many things, but our main goal was to give the class of 2020 some kind of graduation and one that all of our students could participate in, he said, "We discussed the logistics of a drive-in theater situation, and through that conversation, we discussed a parade format. Our elementary teachers organized a staff parade a couple days earlier as well. A video recording of senior awards being announced will be posted on the school website and social media pages on May 13th. Seniors are asked to fill out a form online with all their scholarships, awards, and information." The next article is titled, "Pottawatomie County Announces 10 Additional COVID-19 Cases. State Sets Up Testing Site for a Long-Term Care Facility Staff at Mid-America Center," and this is by Mike Brownlee. 10 Council Bluffs residents are the latest cases of COVID-19 in Pottawatomie County. Pottawatomie County Public Health announced the cases Monday, with the county's total now at 59. 25 residents have recovered from the disease caused by the coronavirus. 31 are isolating at home, 1 is hospitalized, and 2 have died from COVID-19. The 10 new cases were tested for COVID-19 between April 29th and May 2nd, the department said. 4 of the individuals are 18 to 40 years old, 5 are 41 to 60 years old, and 1 is 61 to 80 years old. 5 of the individuals have pre-existing conditions. 4 of the new cases had contact with an existing COVID-19 case, and 6 are the result of community spread. All 10 of these individuals are self-isolating at home. Mills County announced 2 additional cases, putting the county total at 5. The 2 new cases are adults between 18 and 40, with each contracting the disease through community spread, according to Mills County Public Health. The department said it is contacting a contract tracing investigation. Of the county's 5 cases, 3 have recovered. Pottawatomie County also announced 4 new cases on Sunday, all men who live in Council Bluffs. The 3 are between 18 and 40 years old, and 1 is between 41 and 60. The men were tested April 29th and April 30th, the department said. One of the men had contact with an existing COVID-19 case, while the other 3 contacted the disease via community spread. All 4 are isolating at home. There have been at least 678 tests conducted in the county, according to the state's COVID-19 website, coronavirus.iowa.gov, which was updated with numbers as of 10 a.m. on Sunday. There have been at least 103 tested in Mills County. Elsewhere in southwest Iowa, according to the state COVID-19 website, Harrison County, 16 cases, 15 recoveries, 152 tests. Shelby County, 12 cases, 9 recoveries, 98 tests. Montgomery County, 1 case, 1 recovery, 106 tests. Page County, 9 cases, 5 recoveries, 284 tests. Cass County, 1 case, 1 recovery, 114 tests. Monona County, 10 cases, 7 recoveries, 118 tests. Crawford County, 78 cases, 20 recoveries, 1 death, 180 tests. Fremont County, 0 cases, 42 tests. The Pottawatomie County Public Health said the Iowa Department of Public Health, the Iowa Department of Human Services, and the Iowa National Guard are opening a temporary testing site to test Pottawatomie County long-term care facility staff. Testing criteria is based on guidance from the Iowa Hygienic Lab or private lab guidelines. Pottawatomie County Public Health said it does not have a role in deciding who gets tested. Long-term care facilities are at a higher risk of COVID-19 outbreaks than other community settings due to the nature of congregate living, county officials said in a release. And testing long-term care facility staff, IDPH is mitigating the spread of COVID-19 by identifying potential infected staff and anyone who may have been previously exposed and therefore developed antibodies. The testing site is at the Mid-America Center, 1 Arena Way. Tests at the site will take place from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Tuesday and from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Wednesday. Tests are given by appointment only and are supported by the Long-Term Care Testing Strike Teams Initiative. The state is standing up to test nursing home staff, the county department said. The county noted the testing site is not a testiowa.com site. Pottawatomie County Public Health said it continues to conduct contact tracing investigations for each COVID-19 case. A part of contact tracing is assessing risk to the general public. If there's not a risk to the general public, public health will communicate directly with the specific contacts identified in the investigation. If and when a risk to the general public is identified, public health will publicly identify the location and communicate any actions the public should take. Because we have community spread of COVID-19, individuals should be taking precautions to protect themselves. Stay home as much as possible, limit travel, and shopping. If you must leave home, practice social distancing and stay at least 6 feet away from others. Wash hands and disinfect frequently touched surfaces multiple times per day. If you are sick, self-isolate at home, county officials said. Statewide, the Iowa Department of Public Health reported 534 new cases of COVID-19 on Monday, bringing the state total, when combined with Pottawatomie and Mills County cases, to at least 9,715. During a live-streamed press conference on Monday, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said there were 4 additional deaths in Iowa attributed to COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, bringing the state total to 188. There were 3,441 new negative tests reported to the state, and a total of 57,161 tests have been conducted in the state. 1 in 55 Iowans have been tested. 36%, 3,486 Iowans, have recovered after contacting the disease. Iowa has reported 28 outbreaks in nursing homes across 12 counties. The number of cases is also soaring at communities with meatpacking plants. Iowa Department of Public Health Deputy Director Sarah Reiseter said the state is considering whether to release the names of businesses with outbreaks and numbers of infected workers. Not all meatpacking plants have said how many, if any, of their workers are infected, and the state is considering whether the releasing details would serve the public health interest as is required by state law. Reynolds again defended her decision to ease restrictions on businesses in 77 of Iowa's 99 counties and allow church services again across the state. She said those decisions can't be viewed from an isolated perspective, and that she's had to also consider the health, mental health, and livelihood of Iowans as she sees increases in substance abuse, food insecurity, and unemployment. Iowans are meant to work, and we need to open back up, but we have to do it in a safe and responsible manner, she said. This isn't political, and it shouldn't be for anyone, and I don't believe it is. It's about trying to do the right thing in an unprecedented time to really manage the health and well-being of Iowans. One of the counties to reopen, Wapello County in southern Iowa, has seen a spike in cases in recent days, going from 10 last week to about 100 as of Monday, said County Supervisor Chairman Jerry Parker. The county also reported its first death. Parker said he's not rushing to reopen the county courthouse for general business or other county buildings, and the supervisors last week voted to cancel the county fair that was scheduled to start June 17th. I'm not going to jump whether the president or governor says it's open, he said, adding that the public hasn't complained because residents realize something officials are doing to save lives. COVID-19 information and resources. Symptoms in people who have been exposed to coronavirus can include fever, cough, and shortness of breath, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. The symptoms may appear in as few as 2 days or as long as 14 days after exposure. Most people experience mild or moderate symptoms that clear up in 2 to 3 weeks. Older adults and people with existing health problems are among those particularly susceptible to more severe illness, including pneumonia. Iowans are encouraged to go to testiowa.com and complete the assessment. Test Iowa is an initiative designed to dramatically increase the rate of COVID-19 testing in Iowa. Public health officials recommend stay home unless it's absolutely necessary to leave. Self-monitor for symptoms. Call your physician if symptoms appear. Cover coughs and sneezes with a tissue or your upper arm/elbow. Wash hands frequently with soap and water. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects and surfaces. Methodist Health System is offering a community hotline and screening tool at 402-815-7425. CHI Health has a helpline to answer questions and direct patients who may be at high risk of the coronavirus illness. Visit chihealth.com for information. Pottawatomie County Emergency Management Agency has a COVID-19 call center, open from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday at 712-890-5368 or 712-890-5369. For those struggling with mental health during the pandemic, YourLifeIowa.org has several resources, including a hotline at 855-581-8111 and a text-friendly line at 855 895-8398. Additionally, the Hope for Iowa Crisis Hotline connects individuals in crisis to a helping hand with the resources to address and improve mental wellness. The hotline is available 24 hours a day. Call 84-HOPE-4-IOWA, 844-673-4469. The University of Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha has announced a COVID-19 screening app. 1. Check COVID enables users to answer a series of questions and assess their likelihood of having COVID-19. Based on the user's input, the screening guide app will issue a low-risk, urgent-risk, or emergent-risk assessment and guide the individual towards possible next steps. Additionally, go to pcema-ia.org, idph.iowa.gov, and or cdc.gov for more information. Associated Press writer David Pitt contributed to the report. The next article is titled Forecast, Mostly Sunny Week Ahead, and this is by Emily Scheibe. After a rainy Monday, expect some wind. The gust as high as 30 miles per hour expected for today. Highs will reach the upper 60s this afternoon with mostly sunny skies, according to the National Weather Service in Valley, Nebraska. Tonight, a chance of thunderstorms before 6 p.m. with a low of 45. The rest of the week will be mostly sunny with a chance of showers on Thursday. The weather, according to the Weather Service. Today, mostly sunny with a high near 67. Northwest wind 11 to 17 miles per hour with gusts as high as 30 miles per hour. Tonight, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms before 10 p.m. and then a slight chance of showers between 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. Mostly clear with a low around 45. Northwest winds 6 to 11 miles per hour becoming light. Winds could gust as high as 23 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 20%. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 61. North-northwest wind 8 to 13 miles per hour with gusts as high as 23 miles per hour. Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 41. Thursday, a chance of showers with thunderstorms also possible after 1 p.m. Mostly cloudy with a high near 59. Chance of precipitation is 40%. Thursday night, a chance of showers, mainly before 1 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 38. Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 59. Friday night, mostly clear with a low around 38. Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 65. Saturday night, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy with a low around 42. Sunday, partly sunny with a high near 61. Our next article is titled, Council Bluffs Area Grocery Stores Move to Masks for Employees, and this is by John Liu and Courtney Durham. Grocery stores throughout the metro area are requiring employees to wear masks while on the job to help prevent the spread of COVID-19. Hy-Vee announced that all store and distribution center employees throughout its 8-state region are now required to wear masks or other facial coverings while at work in response to the evolving COVID-19 outbreak. Hy-Vee provided masks to all employees over the past several weeks. Wearing a mask or other facial covering inside Hy-Vee stores is mandatory for employees to help protect both employees and customers. The move is among many measures Hy-Vee said it has taken to ensure the health and well-being of its employees and customers over the past several weeks. Other efforts include temporary plexiglass barriers installed at all check stands and pharmacy customer service and inconvenience store counters. Social distancing indicators on the floor, wherever lines typically form in the store, one-way directional signage for all aisles, sanitation of all cart and check stand belts between each customer use, and special shopping times for those considered to be most at risk for illness. In addition to show its gratitude to employees during this time, Hy-Vee is providing another frontline employee appreciation bonus to all of its part-time and full-time store employees. The employees will receive a 10% bonus on all their hours worked from April 13th through May 3rd. This is the second employee appreciation bonus the company is providing to its frontline employees. The other 10% bonus was on all hours worked from March 16th to April 12th. Additionally, one of the nation's largest grocery distributors is responding in a big way to the request by public health officials that people wear masks when out in public. In Iowa and Nebraska, that means that the customers of Family Fair and Supermercado Nuestra Familia will have to start wearing masks unless they are medically unable to, a spokeswoman said. Spartan Nash, parent company of the two grocery chains, and fifth largest food distributor in the nation, announced that it is requiring all employees and customers to wear masks. The policy goes into effect immediately. An exception is being made for those medically unable to do so, such as asthmatics. Spokeswoman Meredith Grimmel said the policy is taking a while to communicate, which is why there's been confusion in the Council Bluffs, Omaha area. Many customers said the store employees said they haven't heard about the requirement. It takes a little time to cascade this out, Grimmel said. As of Friday, all Super Saver employees were required to wear masks, according to Marty Jarvis, Director of Marketing for Super Saver. Super Saver was also taking precautions like ensuring every store sanitized and well-stocked, according to the store website at super-saver.com. Another service is to help with precautions, including ordering food through Instacart online so it can be left outside residents' homes, according to the website. We hope everyone stays safe and healthy, and we're happy and proud to be a part of public service right now for our customers, Jarvis said. We're glad we can help. Aldi began requiring all store and warehouse employees to wear masks or face coverings starting on April 24th, according to a press release from the grocery chain. This was asked out of business partners that work or enter facilities as well. The release said Aldi could provide a mask. However, employees are welcome to bring a face covering from home that meets CDC guidelines. Signage and floor decals were also added to promote safe social distancing, the release said. Fairway has also added signage and floor markings to remind customers to social distance at check stands, meat counters, produce, and dairy sections. They are also providing employees with disposable masks, along with training on how to use a face mask and clean a cloth mask. We strongly encourage customers to follow proper hygiene and mask usage, as recommended by the CDC, as we appreciate their confidence while shopping Fairway, said Emily Toribio, Fairway Stores Inc. Corporate Outreach and Communications Manager. Fairway is open from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. for anyone in higher risk categories to shop. They also provide contactless pay options and are working with local health partners to follow appropriate recommendations, Toribio said. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is calling on people to wear a mask when they can't be certain of staying 6 feet from others, and specifically has cited grocery stores as a place to wear masks. Douglas County, Nebraska Health Director Addie Poore has recently called for Omaha area residents to step up their usage of masks and physical distancing, given the loosening of restrictions in Nebraska. Grimmel said customers shouldn't be surprised to see some employees without masks, because employees with medical issues are exempt, just like customers. Spartan Nash employs 19,000 people around the world. In addition to grocery stores, runs distribution centers and is the largest food supplier to military commissaries. The company is checking employees' temperatures and screening them for symptoms before every shift, she said. Costco will be requiring masks of all customers effective May 4th. Other stores like Baker's and Hy-Vee have not issued similar policies. Before concluding Thursday's interview, Grimmel made a request. Any recognition for these hardworking frontline workers is greatly appreciated, she said. They're not staying home, they're showing up every single day. They're making sure that families get the essential food and medicine and things they need. This is by Nancy Garter of Lee BHM News Service, contributed to this report. You're listening to the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for Tuesday, May 5th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped in Des Moines. I'm Katie Carlton from Drake University. IRIS volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747 and make sure to leave a message if no one is available. Now it's time to move to our opinion section. Our article for today is titled Editorial. Giving Tuesday offers everyone an opportunity to join in the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic. In one way or another, there are a few who have not been impacted to some degree by the COVID-19 pandemic. More than 30 million of our fellow Americans are currently out of work as a direct result of the pandemic, a number that includes 200,000 in Iowa. Millions are unable to make rent or mortgage payments. Millions more, unable to afford the food needed to feed their families, are seen in food lines, some that stretch for miles. These people need help, and much of that help is coming from local nonprofit organizations. From the outset of the pandemic, there have been opportunities for individuals to pitch in to help fight against COVID-19. Metro area residents on both sides of the Missouri River have supported pandemic relief funds created by the Iowa West Foundation, the Pottawatomie County Foundation, and the Omaha County Foundation. The response has been heartwarming, but the needs are far from met. Today is a special day in that fight, a day in which area residents, young and old, rich and poor, can step up to help the local nonprofit organizations that have been in the fight from day one and have given so much. A survey of more than 500 nonprofit leaders conducted by the Nonprofit Association of the Midlands found that more than half, 56%, reported that COVID-19 will have significant impact on their programs, services, or general operations. Many of these organizations have seen substantial increases in calls for services without having secured additional funding to improve those services. Fundraising events canceled to curtail further spread of the coronavirus have resulted in loss of needed revenue that simply cannot be made up. An uncertain economy raises questions about fundraising in the wake of the pandemic. Beginning today, residents of Council Bluffs, Omaha area have the opportunity to join a global response to the pandemic. Hashtag Giving Tuesday Now. Hashtag Giving Tuesday Now is our time to donate and to volunteer for nonprofit organizations to help ensure their continued operation, their continued necessary work during the COVID-19 pandemic, and the weeks and the bumps in the wake of the crisis as we rebuild. We encourage everyone to become a part of the fight to beat the pandemic and do whatever you can to aid in the rebuilding effort that will follow. If you're able, offer your financial support to a nonprofit or nonprofits of your choice. For those who cannot afford a financial contribution, volunteer your services to help those who are helping others. Give blood, donate to a food bank. In whatever way you can, make a personal commitment today to be a part of the solution. Now I'm going to move to our obituary section. Our first obituary is for Sharon Tiedman. Sharon L. Tiedman, age 80, passed away May 2nd, 2020. Sharon was born on October 25th, 1939. Preceded in death by husband Alfred, parents Lester and Mary Phillips, sisters Frances Armington and Carol Collier. Survived by daughter Roxanne, married to Dave Montgomery. Grandchildren, Mike, married to Holly Montgomery. Jen, married to Joe Wilson. Dylan Montgomery. Great-granddaughters, Sydney and Emma Wilson. Brother Bill Phillips, married to Sharon of Council Bluffs. Nieces and nephews. Open visitation Wednesday, 5 to 7 p.m. at Cutler O'Neill Meyer Woodring Bayless Park Chapel, with COVID-19 restrictions in place. Private family funeral on Thursday with interment at Ridgewood Cemetery. Family funeral service will be live streamed at 11 a.m. Thursday on the funeral home's website. Family will direct memorials. The next obituary is for Ethel Zorowski. Ethel Lorraine Zorowski, age 86, of Council Bluffs, passed away May 3, 2020. Ethel was born on November 6, 1933, in Oklahoma, to the late Hubert and Hetty, formerly Heartline Wheat. Ethel is preceded in death by her parents, husband Bernard Sud Clifford Katzenstein, daughter Patricia Wheatington, brothers Curtis Wheat, Arville married to Tiny Wheat, Henry Wheat, and Lavoy Wheat, sisters Betty Hodges and Virgie Stichler, and Shirley Shriver. She is survived by sons Kenneth Katzenstein and Dennis Katzenstein, daughters Buffy, married to Darren Graham and Jennifer Udas. Brothers Delbert Wheat, married, and Donnie, married to Kathy Wheat. Sister Darlene, married to Johnny Patterson. Grandchildren Shaylee Udis, Olivia Zorowski, Rio Conan, Andy Goldsboro, Emily Katzenstein, Adam Katzenstein, Jeremy Katzenstein, Brian Wheatington, and Nick Wheatington. Several great-grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and a host of other friends and family. Visitation will be held on Wednesday, May 6th from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Hoy Kalnaski Funeral Home. Funeral service will be on Thursday, May 7th at 10 a.m. Also at the funeral home will be interment at the Ridgewood Cemetery. Following the service, luncheon following at Caddy's Kitchen and Cocktails, 103 West Broadway, Council Bluffs, with parking in the back. The next obituary is for George Thompson. George J., also known as Jim Thompson, age 83, at Council Bluffs, passed away May 2nd, 2020 at Bethany Lutheran Home. Jim was born June 13, 1936, in Council Bluffs, to the late George J. and Jesse, formerly Fogel Thompson. He graduated from Thomas Jefferson High School in 1954 and attended Iowa State Teachers College before transferring to and graduating from New York University in 1958. Jim was an organist for many Omaha, Nebraska churches and a volunteer for many years at the Council Bluffs Public Library. He is survived by his sister, Nancy, married to Walt Kozier of Council Bluffs, two nieces, Mary Mead and Jane Van Horn, two nephews, David Kozier and Tom Kozier, four great-nieces, four great-nephews, and one great-great-niece. A memorial visitation will be held at a later date. Memorial contributions are suggested to the Council Bluffs Public Library. The next obituary is for Michael Rose. Michael Rose, 62, of Carson, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, May 2, 2020, at Bergen Mercy Hospital in Omaha, Nebraska. Survived by his daughters, Melissa Rose, married to Earl, Nicole Shady, married to Travis, Mom, Dixie Rose, of Carson, sister Roxanne Nyland, married to Jeffrey of Oakland, Iowa, four grandchildren, Hunter and Nevada Shady, and Jordan and Cody Schaefer. Niece Frankie Knudsen, married to Michael, nephew Ryan Nealon, married to Paige, and great nieces and nephews, other relatives and friends. A drive-through visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, May 6, 2020, at the Lois Hills Funeral Home in Carson. The family will be standing outside of the funeral home to greet people as they come by. Guests must stay in their vehicles as we are following COVID-19 state regulations. Families suggest memorials instead of flowers. Going to move to our next obituary. This obituary is for Robert Holton. Robert J., also known as Rob Holton, age 72, passed away May 2, 2020, at Life Care in Omaha, Nebraska, and graduated with the first class at St. Albert in 1966. Robert was united in marriage to Susan Jo Yoakum on February 15, 1969, and they were blessed with two sons, Christopher and Jeremy. Rob served his country in the U.S. Air Force during the Vietnam conflict from 1967 to 1971 and worked for Northwestern Bell Telephone for many years, retiring as the SE Regional Construction Manager. He is preceded in death by his father, Robert, sister Jean M. Hyatt, wife Susan in 2010, brother-in-law Mike McCown. Rob is survived by sons Christopher of Omaha, Jeremy and wife Teresa of Council Bluffs, grandchildren Shelby, Paige, Sydney, Riley, Payton, mother Darlene Holton, siblings and spouses, Mary McCone, Laura married to Louis LaReet, Beth Holton of Patty Holton, all of Council Bluffs, Gina married to Sean Hatcher of Honey Creek, Iowa, David married to Alice of Clinton, Tennessee, Pat married to Francis of Omaha, Mike married to Mary of Honey Creek, Mark of Council Bluffs, Joe of Omaha, many nieces and nephews. Open visitation Wednesday, 5 to 8 p.m. with COVID-19 restrictions in place. Funeral service Thursday, 1:30 p.m. at the Cutler O'Neill Meyer Woodring Funeral Home. Live stream of the funeral will be on the funeral home's website. Interment Hardin Township Cemetery with military rites. The next obituary is for Gail Grammer. Gail A. Grammer, age 75, passed away May 1st, 2020. Gail was born September 20th, 1944 in Fairbury, Nebraska to the late Charles and Helen Amanda Ann, formerly Werner Grammer. Gail attended elementary and high school in Endicott, Nebraska, and attended Fairbury Junior College. He was a sergeant in the Army and served from 1966 and 1969. He served in Germany. He enjoyed working outside and in his garage and loved finding bargains at garage sales. His greatest love was fishing and enjoyed many days on his boat casting lines. He is preceded in death by his parents, infant son Jeremy Michael, and brother Robert Grammer. Gail is survived by his wife, Mary Ann, children Travis Grammer, and special friend Tammy Graham of Red Oak, Iowa, Danielle and husband Phil Sievers of York, Nebraska, and Sean Grammer and wife Sherry of Gretna, Nebraska, siblings Georgine Hoffman of San Antonio, Texas, Leroy and wife Bonnie Grammer of Omaha, Nebraska, Terry and wife Jolene Grammer of Fairbury, Carol Horner of Weston, Nebraska, Karen and husband Bill Horner of Churesco, Nebraska, and George and wife Robin Grammer of La Vista, Nebraska. Nine grandchildren, Kayla, Caden, and Tanner Grammer, and JC and Taylor Turek of Red Oak. Carly and Abby and Ryan Sievers of York, Alyssa and Dylan Grammer, and Mary Jane Fletcher of Gretna, two great-grandchildren, and Kenzie Lee Grammer Outridge and Lincoln Grammer of Red Oak. He was loved by many nieces, nephews, cousins, and friends. Visitation will be Thursday, May 7th, 2020, from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Hoy Kilnaski Funeral Home. Memorial service will be Friday, May 8th at 10 a.m. at the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, the family will direct memorials in his honor. Now, I'm going to move back to our news section and get to some news that we didn't get to for the day. This first article is titled, Fire Truck Makes for a Memorable Birthday for Council Bluffs 6-Year-Old. This is by Courtney Durham. Kim Bryson knew her daughter Billy Bryson's 6-year-old's birthday Saturday would be a birthday Billy would never forget. With the coronavirus and isolation precautions still in place, Billy wasn't able to have her usual pizza birthday party. Instead, the Council Bluffs Fire Department agreed to help her celebrate. Department members drove by in a fire truck with lights flashing and the horn honking as part of a car parade. Until the fire department did this, it would be a birthday she'd always remember, because it wouldn't have been really good. Now it's going to be an awesome birthday because they're doing this awesome thing, said Kim Bryson. Other members of the parade include Kim Bryson's sister, Stephanie Kring, and mother, Jenny Kring, from Colorado Springs, Colorado, who made the 9-hour trip. My mom and aunt decided to really surprise her. The only thing my daughter ever wants for people is to come visit her for the holidays, Kim Bryson said. Whenever they ask what she wants for Christmas, she says, just come over. Kim Bryson estimated around 10 people were in the parade celebrating Billy's birthday. Other ways they celebrated was with Hawaiian birthday decorations from a couple years prior. Balloons, cake, ice cream, and Popeye's spicy chicken. The fire truck and car parade was the biggest surprise since Billy had known about everything else beforehand. It's a little something to cheer them up when they're not able to celebrate their birthday, said Dan Roberts, fire prevention officer for the Council Bluffs Fire Department. The department has fielded multiple requests to help celebrate birthdays during the pandemic. They look at each request, always keeping safety in mind, said Roberts. Kim Bryson said she'd initially reached out to the fire department mid-April. She was pleasantly surprised when they said they were able to help celebrate Billy's birthday, and it helped her feel even more a part of the community. I always thought it was a wonderful community, and I felt like really a part of the community. After this, I feel like our community really does take care of us, Bryson said. Thank you for always taking such good care of Council Bluffs and making us feel like family. With two daughters, Bryson also wanted to thank the Council Bluffs Fire Department for helping both of them. Her oldest daughter, Katie Kring, had been in the paramedic program at Iowa Western Community College and did most of her clinical training at Station 6, Bryson said. By helping with this birthday request, Bryson said, the Council Bluffs Fire Department now positively impacted both of her daughters' lives. What a bunch of heroes. It's not just the scary stuff. The heroic in nature, she said. Now I'm going to move to the next article. This one is titled, It Doesn't Feel Normal. Omaha Restaurants and Businesses Reopened Monday. This is by Todd Cooper, Kevin Cole, and Alla Conley. On the first day to reopen, Omaha showed glimpses of our life before the pandemic. A 6 a.m. opening for breakfast at Leavenworth Cafe. A coffee clutch inside the bagel bin. A woman attended morning church, then stopped to sit down for a breakfast out. Patients went to the dentist and were glad about it. So reality check, the pandemic continues. But under Governor Pete Ricketts' direction, some businesses taking a financial hit through the health crisis and resulting restrictions could try to take their first steps back. Restaurants could offer limited dine-in service. Hair salons, barber shops, and nail salons could open a small number of customers and masks for all. Dentists could see regular patients again. Churches could meet for group services. How will it all work? The public health impacts won't be known for a couple of weeks, but some businesses Monday gave reopening a try. It doesn't feel normal, but we're taking the next step, said Matt Bonenkamp, owner of Harold's Coffee House at 8327 North 30th Street. Leavenworth Cafe at 2419 Leavenworth Street opened at 6 a.m. for the first time since mid-March. Owner Tony Caniglia said it felt good to serve dine-in customers again. We've had about 9 tables of customers this morning, Caniglia said, at 7:30 a.m. We're glad to see some of the regular faces again, but we've done double the number and orders to go. I think people will keep getting takeout until they feel more comfortable. Employees were keeping bleach and other cleaning supplies handy to clean up after customers, he said. Harold's Coffee House had a line of customers waiting at the door, Bonenkamp said. But the number of customers has not reached the 50% capacity limit by 7:45 a.m. We're just real people trying to get through this as comfortably and courteously as possible, Bonenkamp said. Monday morning, the bagel bin had a steady din. A coffee clutch here, a table of customers there, a donut mixed in between the kosher bagels. The spot is relatively big, with a capacity for 80 people in the strip mall, near 120th and Pacific Streets. Groups come in for fresh bagels and hot coffee. In the 6 weeks since the dining areas were closed, owner Sue Bresek and her sons have been paying their staff to work. But with offices shuttered across the metro, the bagel delivery part of their business has dropped, and on some days, to just 3 clients. Normally, Bagel Bin supplies bagels and other breakfast items to 30 to 45 workplaces across Omaha. And even with the curbside and carryout options, business has dropped 60 to 70%. The only worst time in 42 years of business came in January 2010 when a fire destroyed the shop. It's been unsettling, Sue Bresek said. You miss the people. We probably know 80% of our customers by first name. You worry day to day. Bresek worried so much that she has kept on all of her staff, despite the economic downturn. And she worried enough that she raced home every afternoon to listen to Governor Rickard's updates on the coronavirus situation. Does she worry about exposure? Not as much, she said. Customers will stay spread out, and she thinks they'll be at no more risk than when they come in for takeout. The business is still offering takeout and curbside services. Signs Monday said the business would allow no more than 40 people in its 80-person dining room. They don't want history to repeat itself. In late March, they had a Karen, the internet term for the nosy neighbor who reports harmless acts to the authorities. Someone came to pick up bagels, saw that more than 10 people were waiting in the business, and called police. Six Omaha police officers arrived. The officers delivered a gentle reminder of the directed health measures and left. Little bit of fame today, the Breseks wrote on their Facebook then. Monday employees wore masks and gloves and topped off the coffee cups of the fewer than 10 customers scattered through the diner. Asked if she had sat down inside, a woman walking to her car responded, I did. It was so nice. I even went to church. Whether to open has been a subject a bit of online furor. Several restaurants have announced that they will not open their dining rooms until the virus begins to taper off. Others have announced reopening. The comment sections are abuzz. I do think it's dividing people, Bresek said. We are all, of course, really concerned about complying and keeping everybody safe. At the same time, we've got people to support, and if they feel they're comfortable coming in, we'll let them in. Downtown, coffee shops remain shuttered or experience slow foot traffic despite the loosened restrictions. 113th Street Coffee and Tea has been closed since mid-March. A sign on the shop's door from the owner said it was the hardest decision to make. We know our business will be here with all of you smiling at the door, waiting for your favorite drinks to be made. But until that day, we are hoping that we are contributing to improving our chances of keeping our community safe and healthy. Ken Schroeder, the owner of Java Daddy's, worries whether his shop will survive another month. His business has been down 85% because of the coronavirus pandemic. You just take it one day at a time, he said. But we're a day closer to it all being behind us, right? Schroeder has offered takeout orders, but had to throw away product because it wasn't purchased before expiration, and therefore has a limited menu. As of Monday, he's allowing people to stay in the shop to enjoy their food and drink, but he doesn't expect people to rush out to businesses because they're being cautious about returning. He would ask people to sit 6 feet away, but figures that won't be necessary because people are careful about following that rule. There's been such a fear of death created with this, even if it's not logical, Schroeder said. But people are afraid they're going to die if they get this stupid virus. I bet you so many people had it, they didn't even know they had it. The food industry, he said, has always had to worry about public health and keeping a clean environment. So not a lot will change. But Schroeder did sterilize tables and chairs while offering only takeout. Normally, during a nice day, the old market's just packed. Even with the nice days, it's just been a ghost town, he said. Sozo Coffee House built a huge sign on an old warehouse as the largest coffee house in Omaha was open for curbside pickup Monday, An employee said they may open their dining area later this week. In West Omaha, Premier Dental opened at 7 a.m. Monday, and then that's when the practice welcomed its first patients in several weeks. Pam Benedo, who owns Premier Dental with her husband, said things were going well. Staff members seemed relieved to be back in the swing of caring for people's dental health, and patients were eager to hop in the chair. Patients seem excited to come back to the dentist, which on a normal day, they're not always excited, Benedo joked. But she said the practice's waiting room has effectively been eliminated. Patients are asked to wait in their cars and send a text message when they've arrived. They're screened upon entering the business. Staff members, who are also being screened, are wearing personal protective equipment. Benedo says she expects the next weeks to be busy as people work to reestablish their health routines. The practice is prioritizing people who need specialized care, such as those with periodontal disease, which requires routine medical attention. Sarah Fan, owner of VIP Nails and Spa near 132nd Street and West Dodge Road, said Monday she is glad to be open again. The salon had been closed since March 23rd, but is open and taking precautions to prevent the potential spread of coronavirus. Employees are wearing face shields and masks. Clients must wear masks also. Partitions have been set up between the clients and nail technicians for further protection. Customers must sign a waiver saying they are not sick or have a fever. For now, Fan is only accepting appointments, not walk-in customers, so business isn't back to 100%. And two employees aren't working because of virus fears. But some businesses, she said, is better than no business. I'm just trying to survive to pay rent, she said. We don't make lots of money, but that's okay. It's pretty exciting. We have to live with it, and we just need to be careful. Other nail salons decided to wait to open. Midland Nails and Spa in Papillion chose not to open, saying on its Facebook page that the business would wait at least two more weeks or until the end of May. In a text to customers last week, the business said they had to cancel appointments that had been made. Our staff refused to go work at this time. We will update you soon, the business said. Gel Nails and Spa in Midtown Crossing announced it would extend its closure because the managers truly value the health and well-being of both our customers and staff and believe that this is the best option. Lux Nail Spa near 156th and Harrison Street chose to stay closed because employees needed to care for their children, since schools are not in session. Ever since this COVID-19, we have quarantined our family, and therefore we don't have anyone to watch the kids, and we are unable to resume business yet. Funerals in Nebraska are allowed statewide as of Monday, but they're limited to ceremony or service itself, and social distancing practices must be maintained. Monday morning at the Forest Lawn Funeral Home, Cemetery, and Crematorium, west of the Florence area, wasn't much different than it has been since mid-March, said Executive Director Steve Brunken. The funeral home remains open to the public by appointment only. Many consultations with families have been conducted by Zoom video conferencing. Forest Lawn staff members have been able to meet with families in the funeral home cemetery, where it's easy to maintain distance for gravesite selection, Brunken said. Forest Lawn has increased its cleaning and sanitation efforts. Visitation hours have been extended in order to manage how many people are in the building at one time. The funeral home's employees are split into two teams, and only one team comes into the building each day. Brunken said he still has questions about the relaxation of rules on funerals. For example, he said funerals are supposed to be limited to the cemetery, but people often gather before or after. If those gatherings are kept to 10 or fewer people, are they allowed? We're just going to have to kind of play things by ear, he said. Many families have said they plan to hold celebrations of life for their loved ones once large gatherings are allowed again. Families have been very understanding, Brunken said, of the changes. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for Tuesday, May 5th. The Nonpareil can be heard each weekday at 3 p.m. Iris Volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have comments or questions about today's broadcast or any Iris program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. I'm Katie Carlton from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for listening.